It has been 100 years since Agatha Christie wrote her first novel and created the formidable detective Hercule Poirot. Christie's books still sell over 4 million copies each year, more than 30 years after her death. And it shows no signs of slowing. The biographer Laura Thompson, author of the New York Times bestselling The Six, now turns her eye to the world's greatest crime writer in her new book, Agatha Christie, A Mysterious Life. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Laura Thompson to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Absolute pleasure. Hello.
A great pleasure to have you on the program. What brought you to the life of Agatha Christie? Because here is a woman that has had such an impact on our culture, such an impact on literature, and yet prior to reading your book, I knew little or nothing about her.
Well, that's a wonderful thing to hear. You've said it. Exactly that. I was a fan, you know. I was always a fan from the age of about 12 and just sort of read them. They were almost like fairy tales for grown-ups, you know. I loved the way the plots resolved themselves. There was something almost magical about it. And then as I got older and I started rereading them and I thought, gosh, there's a lot more to this than meets the eye. This lady writes with this incredible simplicity. My God, that must have been difficult to achieve. And then I was down in Devon, which was where she was born, and I kept sort of just thinking about her. And fortunately, when I approached her family, her daughter was still alive at the point that I started researching, and I got her blessing. It was very exciting to meet her daughter at the house in Devon that Agatha had bought in 1938, just the most beautiful house, which is now open to the public. But I met her daughter there. Over large gins and just talked about Agatha, and that was the start, you know.
When it comes to just the subtitle of A Mysterious Life, for you in the beginning, what was mysterious about her life?
Well, she was a concealer, which is always interesting. You know, people nowadays tell everything, don't they? But so much more interesting if you don't. And I tell you how, when I first really got interested in her was when I read her Mary Westmacott novels. She wrote these six novels, which are not that widely read. Well, it's certainly not in the UK, but they're really fascinating, fascinating. Proper novels, you know, state of the human condition novels like mid-20th century. And so revelatory about her in an oblique way that she couldn't, you know, the opposite of her detective fiction where everything is tied up neatly. These are full of questions. And I thought, gosh, this is pretty interesting. One of them is directly autobiographical, Unfinished Portrait, but they all tell you a lot about what sort of, this, beneath this facade of the grey-haired lady playing tea, you know, having tea with the vicar and playing bridge and everything, that she was so complex and poetical and quite childlike almost. And still, I felt madly in love with her first husband, who was the man who precipitated the famous 11-day disappearance in 1926 when he said he wanted to leave her for another woman. And she had a kind of emotional breakdown. And of course, you know, to do that, to disappear in order to try and get your husband back is quite a remarkable thing. And you might think about doing it, but actually to do it and to sort of plot it, because you're Agatha Christie, you know, all those things. And she never really talked about it. All those things are just, there's just so much more to her. It's like you turn those detective novels upside down and there's this massive stuff and knowledge about human nature and experience. And that was what I tried to sort my way through.
Just in that 11-day disappearance, as you say, plotted it out. It was very, there was a lot of thought that went into that.
Yes, but she wasn't really in her right mind, you know.
Right.
She was, she'd not just lost her husband, she'd lost her mother. And as my book makes clear, she was desperately attached to her mother, almost more than to the husband, I think. She had this terribly happy childhood, and she said it was a protection, but it was also a difficult thing in a way, because when things went wrong, it came especially hard. You know, her life, nothing bad had happened really until she was 35, and she'd just written Murder of Roger Ackroyd, but she still wasn't particularly well known. It's odd. It sort of said woman writer disappears, not Agatha Christie disappeared. But anyway, she lost her mother in April, and then she lost her husband in August. And this double blow, you know, on a life that had seemed rather charmed, I think it was just too much. And she plotted it out, but it was the only plot she ever constructed that was a failure, if you like, because it had the opposite of the intended effect. She lost her husband forever. But she failed to foresee that it would become, this was her private tragedy, that would become a public event. But, you know, I reenacted that disappearance. I sort of thought, right, I'm going to get under the skin of this. Right. And I tell you, it was scary. That place where she abandoned that car, that was scary in December. It was almost wild for England, you know, under this dark, black sky. And I thought, there's no way this woman did this unless she was deadly serious. You know, some people say it was a publicity stunt. There's absolutely no way. She must have been almost out of her mind when she did it.
But as you also say, yes, out of her mind, but also... But we see this having an effect on her writing after that, don't we? I mean, we see this have an effect on her.
Yes, I think it cut her life in two. That sounds a bit melodramatic, but I almost think that's how she saw it. I think she was religious, and she felt she committed the sin of despair, because I think she did think about killing herself. This, you know, I talked to her daughter about this. It was difficult, but I sort of did. And she, you know, sort of gave me pretty good sense of what it had all been about and how it affected the rest of Agatha. So that's the thing. It wasn't 11 days. It was the rest of her life, which was another 50 years. You know, Rosalind, the daughter, said she was still very fond of her father. Even when he married another woman, she said, I could never really tell my mother I'd seen him. It upset her too much. You know, it was pretty difficult for Rosalind, I think, actually, being Agatha Christie's daughter. You know, there was money and what went with it, but it was a strange life, I think, really, because they all lived with the shadow of this thing, this disappearance. It was always in the papers. And she wrote it out, I felt, in those Mary Westmacotts. I think they were all about him in a way, Archie, the husband, trying to work out what love is, really. If it's an illusion, but you still feel it. You know, she alludes to it in some of her detective fiction even, I think, Five Little Pigs, Death on the Nile, Sad Cypress. There's a girl in them who, you know, who sort of loves too much. And the comic, but she hints at it because they're detective fiction, and she liked the impersonality of that, I think.
Laura Thompson tells the story of Agatha Christie in her new book, Agatha Christie, A Mysterious Life, published by Pegasus. There were, as you say, the six novels under the name Mary Westmacott, 66 detective novels, 14 short story collections. That includes the Hercule Poirot and Miss Marple, as well as the longest-running play ever, The Mousetrap. What do you think led to that longevity of the popularity of Agatha Christie, that she was able to have these characters and have them be so popular, not just in her home country, but around the world?
It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, she's just the most... And she always said, oh, I hate work. I love leisure. She wanted to be like her father, who had grown up in New York, actually, and who never did anything. She said, he has such a lovely life, because she never stopped work. She was a writer by temperament, you know, a creative by temperament, although she'd originally wanted to be an opera singer. But I think it is that simplicity, which is so deceptive. And I think, you know, there was... When I was writing the book, you know, people in this country, the UK, would sort of say, oh, she's not very good. Her people aren't very deep. She's not real. I mean, all those criticisms are so irrelevant because, of course, she's not writing reality. It's an artistic construct. You know, her murders. Obviously, they're not really going to happen. But it's such an irrelevant thing to say. I don't think she ever wrote anything that wasn't true. I think her motivations of her characters are true. I think that's why they're so satisfying to read and why they've lasted, because there's a truth, there's a wisdom about human nature, particularly within those really good, really good novels like Five Little Pigs, I think, is her best. And, you know, Murder on the Orient Express, there's something so true about that. It's what do you do when the legal system lets you down? Do you have the right to natural justice? It's you know, there's a fundamental idea that you don't have to be aware of it. She's not throwing it at you. She's not. It's just there. And I think the solutions play on something real and true and strong. To do that with the simplicity, that kind of geometric perfection that she did, no one else can do it. I can't think of anyone else who can do it. Not so simply.
Right.
You know, when I said they're like fairy tales for grown-ups, they do have the simplicity of child's literature, but it's there's so much more in there. But I just think they're satisfying in the way that a children's book is satisfying, but they're underpinned by, you know, her knowledge of human nature is remarkable, I think. Five Little Pigs, every move of plot in that is also a move of character, but you don't have to read them like that. You don't, you know, you can be aware of it or not aware of it. They just work. And the power of a great story is enduring, and nobody did it better than her.
Laura Thompson is our guest. The name of the new biography is Agatha Christie, Mysterious Life. Yes, there is an accessibility to her work. Talk a little bit about her style, how she would write these novels. You used the word geometric a moment ago. What was it that she did in setting up and plotting these stories? And I assume had quite a few plates spinning at a time.
Oh, unbelievable. And if you see her writing notebooks, and I read them all through the night, one night staying at Greenway House. Oh, my God, that was so thrilling. She went through agonies, absolute agonies, and of course you don't think that at all. You know, a book like The ABC Murders, it's so perfect and simple. The idea was not that at all at the beginning. She went through all sorts of permutations before she came to that. But she hid it. She completely hid it. She didn't, you know, a lot of detective story writers, particularly those Golden Age ones, they seem to feel the need to prove that they're actually cleverer than that genre. Like Dorothy L. Sayers. I mean, I love Dorothy L. Sayers, but she went to Oxford. She was an academic. She was an intellectual. And you're always very aware of that in her books. It's like, yeah, it's detective fiction, but, you know, actually I'm clever. I'm really clever. You know, Agatha, I always felt, wanted to keep within the genre. I mean, she is the genre. She defined the genre. And Poirot the same. He's pure detective. There's nothing else to him, really, other than an assemblage of sort of characteristics, mannerisms, if you like. He's just a brain, really. Miss Marple, not so much. But it's the purity of it and the way, and there's this kind of conceptual quality. It's not just, oh, there are six people and one of them's done it. It's, they all did it, or none of them did it, or it was a murder that was actually a suicide, or it was a child, or it was a policeman. You know, there's something, why did that person, oh, well, that was a dress rehearsal for the actual murder. There's something so sort of big and bold about those ideas that is more than just, one of you must have done it, and I'll twist it around a bit until, you know, and hope that you don't guess. Hers are bigger than that. She, and how those ideas came to her, I mean, the notebooks will just pick up on anything. It'll just say something like, old lady in a train, which I think is probably murder is easy, or, you know, anything could give her an idea. And she must just have been thinking all the time. She actually wrote them very, very quickly in about 6 weeks, which is incredible. But she had a gift for knowing what should come next. You can't teach something like that. But if you tried to replicate it, I don't think it would be possible. It was simply the way her mind worked, which is what makes those Westmacotts all the more extraordinary, because her mind works completely differently in those. You know, she's just chucking everything out all over the place, every idea that's in her head, really. They're just so different, and they must have been such a release for her. And she was very, very disappointed when it was when her secret that it was actually her who'd written them. She was very sad about that, because I think they were her, you know, her catharsis, if you like, where she could write out all the stuff she had to tie up neatly in a little box with the detective fiction. With Mary Westmacott, she could open the box, you know.
It's also fascinating just to think of the history that she made. Here is a woman who is a tremendously successful author. And not only is she a successful author, but in the case of Miss Jane Marple, she is writing about a woman detective. These are a woman writing about a woman detective. This was not commonplace at its time.
No, although there had been female detectives before Miss Marple. There was a sort of little tradition, certainly in this country, and she wasn't the first. I think there was somebody called Miss Silver or something like that, who was a kind of older lady who, you know, in tweeds. Miss Marple, though, she's peerless, really. She's very much from Agatha's. She had these grandmothers who were actually sisters. One was a grandmother, one was a great aunt. You know, I think Miss Marple was very much derived from them, to, you know, that kind of innate wisdom. I'm sure if one of her grandmothers had been in the hotel at Harrogate, they'd have known it was Agatha Christie and known exactly what she was doing there. You know, it was just a kind of instinctive. Well, she says there's no such thing as instinct. It's years of experience that you're not even aware of. It's gone so deep in you. And with Miss Marple, she has no life experience as such. She's just a repository of wisdom that I think was very satisfying for Agatha to write into life. She created Miss Marple first after that, the trauma of the disappearance. She wrote in short stories first, and then Murder at the Vicarage a couple of years later. And I think it was probably a very consoling character for her. I think she is a consoling character, Miss Marple. And St. Mary Mead is where I grew up is not unlike that, to be perfectly honest. That little village, we didn't have murders, but plenty of desire to commit them, probably. you know, that kind of nosiness. I mean, that is real. And, you know, there is something very, I don't know, people seem to recognize that as something typically English. I think it would have driven Agatha mad to live in such a place. She was a very cosmopolitan woman, as you know. I mean, that's the other thing. If she'd stayed with her first husband, her life would have been so different. He was a very conventional man. He was a very attractive man physically, but he was a very conventional man, and he liked a conventional life, and I think she was too much for him, really. And I think if she'd been allowed to stay with him and find that out, it would have been easier for her. I don't think she ever really got over the shock of losing him so much as him. Mm. But with that, you know, she would never have gone to all those countries. She would probably never have. She thought of herself as a wife who was an amateur writer, and made, you know, and enough money to buy a car, and it was lovely. But without him, she became Agatha Christie, no question.
Laura Thompson's new book is Agatha Christie, A Mysterious Life. The book is published by Pegasus. How did she feel, and you write about this, but how did she feel about success? How did she handle the success of being Agatha Christie?
Well, again, that wretched disappearance, you know, made life so difficult for her. Because everyone always said she was shy. I don't know. I mean, before, when she was with Archie, she had her photo taken for the Sketch magazine, photo taken with her baby daughter, and She gave talks about writing and all that kind of thing. Now, after the disappearance, she became much more reclusive because I think she was always so terrified of the newspapers, what they would say. And also she changed a lot physically. She was a very nice-looking woman, and she put on a lot of weight, and I think she was still, you know, attractive and what have you, but she changed hugely physically, and was very conscious of that, very conscious of having, as she saw it, lost her looks. She'd been rather almost like a lovely, you know, this wonderful long hair that she could practically sit on and everything, and I think she felt she'd lost the romance of her appearance, and that made her, she loathed being photographed, she loathed being interviewed. She used to just write to her agent, oh, tell them to, you know, no way, not doing it, you know, all this, it nearly drove him mad, but actually, it played into her hands, because it made her even more mysterious, and she had the image, the grey-haired lady, you know, arsenic in the cucumber sandwiches, etc., etc., and that image was incredibly powerful, and also, you know, fitted the bill very, very well, and it also shielded her. It was, you know, behind that she could live her private life and write her Mary Westmacott's, and she loved houses. At one point she owned six. She loved Greenway, the house in Devon where I met her daughter. I mean, it just is the most beautiful place. And she liked being there with her dogs and her second husband, who was a bit of a problem, but she could handle him because I think she wasn't in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she did then get into trouble with tax through no fault of her own, and you know, the most successful writer in the world practically was twice advised to go bankrupt. Her affairs weren't very well handled, but she sort of lived hand to mouth on this terribly grand scale, you know, and she enjoyed it. I think after 1926 she was determined to enjoy her life and cover the century, which she really did. She went everywhere. She wrote.
Mm.
And she enjoyed the fruits of success. She enjoyed the fact that success enabled her to hide from success, if you like. The money, or the, you know, which she did have money, although she always was in trouble for tax, she still had, obviously, cash in hand, as it were. And she could finance her husband's archaeological career. He was an archaeologist, and she wrote a lot of her, you know, Miss Marple English novels in a mud hut in Iraq, because she could hide away there on those archaeological digs. She could be Mrs. Mallowan, married to Max Mallowan, and, you know, spend her time on the dig cleaning ivories with her face cream, and have peace. So, yes,
there's,
she enjoyed
wrong.
Success in that it enabled her to live as she pleased. The big question is whether she would still rather have been with her first husband, and that I do not know the answer to.
The name of the book is Agatha Christie, A Mysterious Life. It is a beautiful book. It's fascinating, quite affectionate, and it is just an awful lot of fun to read. Agatha Christie, A Mysterious Life. It's published by Pegasus. Laura Thompson, what a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much indeed.
Again, Agatha Christie, A Mysterious Life by Laura Thompson is out from Pegasus. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.